This is Jane Smith reporting for WASP News. We report so you don't have to decide. Now, we're live outside of Sovereign Studios, where a protest has been taking place. Sir, what is going on here?
We're going to put an end to his godless hedonism. He's corrupting the entire planet.
You must be talking about the golden stallion of the tech world, Brian Sovereign.
That's right. That sex fiend of an anarchist has crossed the line. We're going to rip his triple black clothing and then him to shreds.
But Brian Sovereign believes in nonviolence.
We don't care. He wants to end government and wants to pervert science and technology to do it. Brian Sovereign has to be stopped.
This just in. Brian Sovereign is coming out of the studio.
Baby, it is a hell of a time of year to not have kids, isn't it, baby? Woo! Happy Saturnalia to all of the thousands and thousands of Sovereign Tech listeners. And oh man, my celebrations are already taking place. And I'll tell you, we got a very special episode. Of course, the Golden Stallion, the Man of Tomorrow, Sav Zu, the Rated R radio star, is here for you. And I've got a very special episode for you because I have a very special guest that we will get into later. And I will also be joined by the lovely and hyper-intelligent Dr. Stephanie Murphy later on in the show for that guest. Oh, man, did I have a hell of a time. Awesome, awesome conversation. And, well, somebody I'm a big fan of, but I won't spoil the surprise. No, you know what? Let's spoil the surprise. I mean, if you didn't see it in the show notes already, it is the one and only Mistress Harley. Mistress Harley is the tech dom. We've talked about her in the past on this show, and now I had the great pleasure of actually having her on the show. So we're going to get to that in a bit. But first off, we've got a ton of stories to get to this week, and we'll try to get to a few of them. And then later on in the show, I actually have a review of a product that I'm going to be getting into that I am so excited about that has barely left my hands because I love this damn thing so much. But I won't spoil the surprise on that one. But that will be our climax. But man, do we have some interesting stuff to get into? Some, you know, little news stories here and there before we get into the interview with Mistress Harley here. Hey, how's that Bitcoin price doing for you, baby? Let me tell you, if you want to diversify your wealth right now, not a bad idea, okay? In my opinion, you know, not financial advice, but just my own thoughts, not a bad idea to diversify your wealth right now. Maybe what you want to do is maybe get into a little precious metals, something that's been around for a good while, holds its value nicely, okay? You want to get on board with that, but maybe you want to use that Bitcoin to get it. Well, let me tell you what you do. You go to Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, rrbi.co. That's the website, rrbi.co. That'll get you your hookup, okay? You go there, you tell them the Golden Stallion sent you, all right? And they are a Bitcoin preferred business. Believe me, they want to deal with you, okay? Get that gold and silver, platinum, palladium, whatever. Get the coins, however you want it. They've got your hookup. Get it with that cryptocurrency. Diversify. You know, precious metals, I say this all the time. Precious metals is like, that's real cold storage, right? We talk about offline cold storage. It doesn't get any more offline or any colder, all right, than precious metals, than gold and silver. And, you know, these things have been used for a good long while. Okay, talk about a track record. So jump on that. Do it at rrbi.co. Go to Roberts & Roberts Brokerage. Get your hookup with these crypto, or, you know, you can use cryptocurrencies to get some precious metals. And I thank them so much for being a longtime sponsor of Sovereign Tech. Woo, let's get back to it. So there was an announcement that was made. Actually, this is back in September. This is a huge kerfuffle in the cryptocurrency space. That Amazon, everybody, now this really happened. Amazon was registering domain names for like Amazon, Ethereum, Amazon, Bitcoin.com, and you know, whatever, like all these different ones. And I talked about it and I said, look, calm down. Amazon buys these kind of domains all the time. And, you know, that was in conjunction with a supposed report that everybody really misread. And a lot of people were pushing out there, a lot of big names were pushing out there stating that Amazon was going to start accepting Bitcoins come end of October. Of course, we're into December. Has that happened? Not yet. Okay. All right. Just checking. So Bitcoin's doing fine. Bitcoin doesn't need Amazon. Amazon doesn't need Bitcoin. Okay. Anyway, so they had bought these web domains, you know, that, and everybody's like, oh, this is, you know, a harbinger of what's to come. They're going to be taking Ethereum too. This is going to be crazy. And I said, no, stop, stop, stop. And I know I was the only person, unfortunately, that came out and, you know, tried to bring in a reality check. Look, what they were doing was, is that you buy, Amazon buys per year hundreds, if not thousands, of domain names. And the reason they do this is to actually protect their brand, not because they're going to use them. They use it because they don't want somebody to come out, say, with a gift card website that is Amazon for Ethereum.com or something like that, right? Because then, you know, that sounds like, oh, Amazon is supporting Ethereum or something. Like, it's brand protection. That's all that they're doing when they buy these things up. Now, an interesting URL that was purchased was something called AmazonTube recently. And there have been some other, you know, legal actions taken around this term, AmazonTube. Now, what does that sound like? Of course, it sounds like YouTube, right? So is Amazon going to come out with a YouTube competitor? Well, of course, they already, you know, a couple of years ago, they already did one of the biggest acquisitions, you know, of any company, let alone the fact that it was actually a stream, you know, video streaming service, that being Twitch, which, what did they buy that for, like $1 billion? So, I mean, they kind of already have a named video service that they could run with, and Twitch is certainly one of the most popular in the world. So are they, you know, does this mean that they're going to be coming out their own YouTube? I don't know. It could be another URL that they've bought for brand protection, right? So that way you're not buying up, say, something that leads to Twitch, that leads to your Twitch website or something that has the term Amazon on it, right? And, you know, or maybe it's to make sure that you don't come up with some kind of TV show called Amazon and you come up with a website called AmazonTube and people somehow think that it's associated with Amazon and it gives it more credit than it deserves or something like that. I'm still really open that this could just be, you know, some kind of protectionist move, you know, brand protectionist move on the part of Amazon. Okay. However, you know, maybe would they, I mean, they're the only ones that could actually take on YouTube. It is definitely an area that needs some disruption, needs some real competition because, you know, Vimeo's not really doing it. I mean, there's, you know, actually an area that is kind of disrupting it quite a bit. You know, when you consider like Pornhub, when you consider like, what is it? I Want Clips or something like that, or not I Want Clips. ManyVid, right? I think that's another one where you get a lot of like, you know, cam girls and stuff like this, all of which are great. You know, you get a lot of those services. Now, I mean, those are competitors, but then a lot of them aren't really breaking into, you know, this new, they're not really breaking into this area that YouTube has where, you know, kind of everybody can go there, right? So yeah, I could, you know, and when you put this in conjunction with there were those rumors that Amazon was actually going to start a Amazon TV or an Amazon video service that was going to be for free, but was going to be ad supported. This makes you wonder when you combine it with that, it does make you wonder a little bit. But I don't know. It could just be protectionist, but certainly YouTube needs competition. I will be the first to, you know, to raise that banner. I'm not saying I want Amazon to be that competition. Amazon's big enough. Again, we've talked about this on the show for years, the Amazon World Domination Tour. But, you know, maybe that's going to happen. So just putting that on people's radar. Of course, maybe something like AmazonTube and really YouTube as well could take advantage of, finally, the 3GPP. I think, if I remember right, that's the initials for the organization that comes out with the mobile standards, the mobile radio standards, that being like 3G, 4G, LTE and all of that. They have finally announced a spec, and the full details I don't think will be coming out till like next week. But they finally announced a spec for 5G called 5GRN. Okay, that's the first one for 5G. There might end up being more, but now this is something that manufacturers, companies, you know, all of them, Apple, you know, Google, Samsung, whoever, can look at and say, okay, this is what we are allowed to do. And now also AT&T, T-Mobile and the like, they can start rolling stuff out. Now, you know, that's something interesting. T-Mobile said that they are looking to kind of disrupt sort of the cable industry in general. I don't know how the hell that's going to end up shaping up, but interesting that that happened. You have Amazon Tube, you have T-Mobile talking about creating some kind of cable service that I assume would not just be something you'd package over the average cable service, that it would be something you would package maybe with your mobile device or something like that, that wouldn't use the cable infrastructure that exists right now. I don't know, but you know, that's kind of out there too. So this is getting interesting. It's interesting that all of this gets announced at the same time that we now finally have an official spec for 5G. Okay. Again, that being 5GRN. Now, understand this. It's still going to be a long time probably before this gets rolled out and before anybody actually puts it into place. I know some of the earliest plans were looking at like 2020, which is still a couple years away at least. But even then, you know, like say, let's say T-Mobile was going to use 5G for its TV service, you know, for its new cable package, even though now calling it cable would be kind of a misnomer, right? Because there aren't any cables. But but say they were going to do that. Like 5G, the claims for 5G are that it can do tens of gigabits per second. I mean, crazy, crazy speeds that most of the world doesn't even the U.S. doesn't, or most of the U.S. doesn't even have, you know, for your home broadband of any kind. Okay. You know, don't buy too much into that hype. Okay. Because even like 4G. Okay. And how long has 4G been around? You know, a few years now. You know, was supposed to allow for anywhere between, like, if you were moving, you could get 100 megabits per second. But then if you were stationary, 4G theoretically could get 1 gigabit per second, 1 gigabit internet. Is your phone getting 1 gigabit internet? Are you getting 1 gigabit internet over 4G? No, of course you're not. Okay. So don't get too excited about these claimed speeds that, you know, like that 5G is supposed to be able to do and all this other stuff, because for whatever reasons, and there are legion of reasons, you know, the specs don't, they really don't live up to the hype. And it's not even necessarily a perfect world situation. It's just that nobody really takes advantage of it, or nobody's willing to put in the extra money it takes to, you know, to have the infrastructure to where they could really use that. So I'm not too excited about 5G. I'm pretty tempered about it. And frankly, like I absolutely cannot imagine, you know, unless we get to the point there. I mean, there's a hypothetical device that I have described in the past on this show where instead of your phone actually having, you know, like 5G or 4G or something like that, what you would end up doing is you're going to have so many devices that you are, and really like we are starting to separate devices now that it's kind of getting back to that instead of ramming everything into a phone. Instead of that, what you're going to end up having is you'll buy a, you know, I mean, these already exist, but you will buy a what is effectively a Wi-Fi hotspot, and you will put that in your pocket, and then all of your devices will just connect to that. But really, until we get to that, you know, like what more does a phone need to do? I mean, how much higher quality video really? I mean, 4G handles the high quality video just fine. Like I don't even really grasp what they expect to be done with a 5G device, unless, you know, we're talking about a future where you need to be downloading blockchains to your, you know, to your fucking smartphone. But at that point, you also have another problem. You need to start putting in like a lot more storage into these phones. So it's weird. I mean, but yeah, if we're getting to the point where, you know, you have one device that acts as your Wi-Fi router for everything that you have, sure, then there's stuff you're going to do on your computer, downloading games or whatever else, you know, that would actually, you know, where it would warrant having those kinds of speeds. So it's just kind of an odd thing. Like, I feel in a very real way that unless they're going in that direction where all of your devices connect through a 5G connection, you're kind of selling people bullshit. Because, I mean, I don't want to fall in the trap of saying, well, it's fast enough, but that is kind of what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, how much more are you really going to do? If anything, you should be doing less with your smartphone, not more. But anyway, okay, well, let's move on to another story. Just letting you know that that's out there, and just temper your dreams, okay? Because this shit, you know, it can claim to do 10 gigabits. That's probably not going to be happening, and certainly not in 2020, or tens of gigabits, I should say. Of course, something that might want to take advantage of a 5G connection is actually a new bit of what can only be described as malware. And it's called Laopi. I think that's how you pronounce it. L-A-O-P-I. And this is if you remember, we've talked about, was it CryptoHive, which allowed for websites to do, like Pirate Bay used it, and actually a lot of major websites used it. But we talked about how there were problems with CryptoHive's implementation, where it allowed CryptoHive, if you visited, say you went to the Pirate Bay, it would use some of your system resources, as in your computer's resources, to mine cryptocurrency, specifically Monero. Now, Laopi does the same thing, where it will mine Monero. However, what's kind of unique about it, or what's different about it compared to CryptoHive, is that this gets installed. You have to, it's specifically more for your phone. Okay, so you would install, say, a security app. They would bake in, you know, Laopi's code into a security app, like an antivirus or something. Okay, you would install that antivirus, and this has been found in the wild. Okay, you would install that antivirus, and that antivirus would then ask for a lot of, you know, very serious permissions on your smartphone. And of course, if you're installing an antivirus, you're like, well, shit, yeah, of course, I'll do that. It's got to be able to scan for threats on my phone, so I better give it permissions, right? That's what the average person would do. Of course, real quick, I always tell people, do not put antivirus software of any kind on your smartphones. Just don't do it. But this could certainly be put into just about any app, I imagine, app where it would make sense to have to ask for so many permissions on your smartphone, to where, you know, people, I think, would be gullible and give into it. Of course, maybe people just say, like, oh, you need to allow for this? Okay, fine. Maybe people just do that automatically. I don't know. But... you know, I usually recommend, hey, see what kind of crazy permissions it's asking for. And, you know, yeah, Facebook's going to ask you for every permission because they want to own your life. But, you know, if it's not Facebook, definitely ask questions. Wait, why does this want access to my contacts? Wait, why does this want access to my camera? Why does this want access to my microphone, etc.? So you would install, say, this antivirus app that has Laopi, baked into it. And when you installed this, you know, it would run and it would do its thing. And if you had other security software on there, let's say you had another antivirus like Lookout or Sophos or something like that, which are, if you really deathly feel like you need antivirus software on your smartphone, those are the two that I recommend, especially Sophos. Then it would find those, and it would tell you, and it would come up with screens that would loop. So it try to keep you from doing anything else until you did what the app, you know, what this Laopi, app effect. Well, I don't want to call it Laopi app, but Laopi, not infected, but Laopi laced app. How about that? Laced, it's going to force you to do what it wants you to do, or it's going to try to anyway. And so if it detected Lookout or Sophos, or if it detected any other antivirus software, it would actually get rid. It would tell you to uninstall the legitimate software because it would say that it's malware. And then once it has those permissions, it starts running its process. And people have been testing this, and come to find out, you can actually, like, this can literally, like, melt, almost literally melt your phone inside of a couple days. Because it pretty much, this app will bypass all of the safety protocols of what usually keeps your phone from overheating. It just takes over that much control. And so it's just trying to mine those crypto, you know, trying to mine Monero as quickly as it can. Now, this isn't a condemnation against Monero, okay? But I'm just saying that, you know, that's what it's going for. So it'll just keep going until, again, it will, like, it could melt your battery. I mean, this could cause all kinds of problems. This is insane. Wow. You know, but this is the future that we're, you know, this is one of the side effects, I guess you could say, of, you know, of digital money, the concept of digital money. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, the idea of having unused processes, maybe going to some kind of, I mean, on a smartphone, it shouldn't really be a thing, because unless you fix the battery life to work and generally last for weeks, you know, you don't want, you know, if you're not, I mean, you want to use as few processes as possible whenever you can on a smartphone. You know, on a computer that's plugged in, you know, and you're visiting websites and stuff, maybe that's a little bit of a different story. But this is pretty ugly. So the main thing to steer clear of, you know, pay attention to permissions, and just in general, steer clear of antivirus software. You don't need it on desktops and laptops either. Like, I mean, you just don't. Okay. So keep that in mind. But yeah, on phones, I mean, this is causing literal physical damage to devices. You know, so to make of that what you will, but this is your evolution of, well, this is one direction that things can go. Let's just be mindful of it. And that way, I mean, you know, because we don't want to, you know, again, the problem's not with Monero. You know, just somebody came up with this clever way of mining Monero. And we just want to be conscious of these things and keep them from happening. So, you know, software minimalism, I talk about this all the time. Software minimalism, only install the apps you need. Be very particular in what you install. Don't just go fucking installing everything. Okay, like the appinization of whatever, you know, you go to this restaurant, oh, install our app, and don't, because this kind of shit's going to be a part of it at some point, you know, I mean, whether it's malicious or otherwise. So, and again, you really don't want to give up your processes on any of your machines, in my opinion, you know, especially if it's something that's mobile, like a laptop or whatever, you just don't want that to happen. So, yeah, Leopi, bad news. But while we're talking about slowing down phones, wow, I mean, just a dumpster fire admission by Apple. Now, not that they wanted to admit to this. It's because there was a viral Reddit post about the matter. But Apple finally admitted that, now the reasons, we'll talk a little bit about the reasons, but Apple finally admitted that over time, especially on older iPhones, they do start to slow down the functionality, you know, the processes, everything. Like they slow down the phones via the software. Now, here's the thing. So there's been a long held conspiracy theory that as soon as there is a new iPhone model that gets released, the theory goes is that Apple will, they'll put out an update, okay, to these older smartphones. You know, say like you say the iPhone 5 came out. Then they start to, like, they purposely, through software, slow down the iPhone 4 and make it laggy and buggy and whatever to supposedly incentivize you. You know, this is what's called planned obsolescence, right? To incentivize you to go out and buy an iPhone 5, right? Or whatever, you know, the latest numbers are. If it's, you know, to do, like, an iPhone 7 to update to an iPhone 8 or an iPhone X or iPhone 10. So that's the conspiracy theory. Now, they finally admitted that actually, yes, we do slow down your phones on you. But their claim is not because they want you to go out and buy a new phone, but because they want the phone in your hand to last longer. What they're saying is that your batteries, which they are, they're, you know, lithium polymer or right, LiPos, right? LiPo batteries, that LiPo batteries over time just, you know, wear down. They don't hold a charge as well. You know, they don't perform as well. And you get to the point to where they become completely useless if we don't incrementally slow down the phone to where, you know, to where it allows for the, you know, the LiPo battery with the less ability to charge and just the lesser charge in general, you know, to allow the phone to operate in the first place. So Apple admitted it straight up that, yes, they slow down their old phones. Now, here's kind of the curious thing. I guess I wonder if somehow, like, how does this work? Does the software, because there wasn't a lot of clarity on this, does the software monitor the condition of the battery and then it's just automatically designed to start, you know, making it last longer? I mean, ironically, like this to me, if that's what it's really all about, is to keep your smartphone able to keep going. There's a few different things that I would do here. Like, if that's really a concern and you want people, the smartphone that's in their hand, to keep going for them, first off, why not make replaceable batteries? Yes, you can pay Apple $79 and they'll put a new battery in your iPhone. Okay, you can actually do that. And certainly that's a lot cheaper than buying a new iPhone. Okay, I'd be curious for people that do that if they ran similar tests to what had been independently done that led to Apple finally admitting that they do this, you know, if it would still end up being sluggish or whatever. I'm curious. But Apple just has this crazy obsession that there is no real great answer for. Why does everything have to be thinner and lighter? Like, didn't people in 2007 love their fucking iPhone? You know, or pick the year. I don't know, whatever you think the perfect model was when it came out. Don't you think that people loved that goddamn phone? Of course they did. Like, what really, what is this obsession with thinner and lighter? You know, we really don't have a good answer to this other than it's getting, you know, my only theory that I've laid out on Sovereign Tech in the past over the years is that they're just trying to get you used to where you're holding nothing in your hand, like literally nothing, you know, where it becomes like some kind of, you know, where it's like those OLED screens that could roll out or something, but you just get used to more and more where you're not actually holding something in your hand. I mean, that's the only psychological like buildup that I could imagine they're going for. It doesn't make any sense. And because also if the battery's a problem, fine, you don't make it replaceable. Put a fucking bigger battery in it. If you can get better battery life out of an iPhone 8 and it's thinner than the iPhone 6, then fucking keep the iPhone 6 body design and just put more battery there. Yeah. Like this, it really doesn't, it makes sense. Like I get it. You know, their argument is kind of sound, but at the same time, it seems like a weird solution to this problem. A very weird solution to this problem. You know, again, do replaceable batteries, put in bigger batteries. Don't go for the thinner and lighter, you know, do whatever that takes, you know, to keep that from being a thing. It still feels like, I mean, and it's really shady that it finally took somebody to independently find out about this for them to finally admit it. Like I said, this would have been, for me, it would have been a selling tactic. It's like, look, we care so much. We want you, what you hold in your hand, we want you to hold that for so long that we have this set up so that even as, look, batteries generally degrade. This is science. Even as it does that, we're going to make sure that your device can keep going the distance. Like, I would see that as a selling point. But no. It's weird. I mean, this is not okay. The uproar that they are getting against them is well-deserved. Yeah, again, I understand the argument. And, you know, one could say that also you have the problem where, okay, but, you know, at least Apple's good about putting, you know, modern versions of iOS on their, you know, they're backwards compatible where they'll put, you know, they'll allow for iOS 11 to work like four or five generations back of iPhones. And you say, well, that's, you know, that's a good thing because that way people get the latest security updates and all this. And look, I generally agree, you know, agree with that point. And good on Apple for doing that. And I get it. Like these older, you know, versions aren't able to take advantage of everything that, say, newer, like these older hardware, you know, these older phones, the phones themselves, the hardware itself, you know, can't do all the same things that the newest version can, that the newest operating system was tailor-made, you know, to take advantage of. And so naturally, you know, one would make it feel sluggish. That's always been kind of the argument against the conspiracy theory that existed before this, you know, this admission finally came out from Apple. Okay. And I mean, and that makes a degree of sense too. So I'm not going to necessarily say that Apple is engaging in planned obsolescence, but this does come off as very weird as far as what they're doing. And kind of based on the fact that they won't engage in more practical solutions like removable battery, like, you know, bigger battery, etc. Yeah, it just seems like a costly trick. It still feels like maybe there is something shady going on here with Apple. You know, but all those people who, you know, were being called conspiracy theorists, guess what? I mean, whether it's for planned obsolescence or not, they're right. Apple was fucking with older models of iPhones as new models came out. They absolutely were. You know, I mean, like that's fact now. Now, the reasons behind that, okay, that's where there's some argument. But yes, Apple was absolutely like purposely scaling down the abilities of your iPhone over time. In the abstract notion, regardless of what the reasons are, that's not okay with me. It's just not. Or at least fucking tell me that you're doing that. The fact that you're hiding it makes it very suspicious. You know, if I had, say, a laptop and I had Ubuntu on it or something, right? And Ubuntu comes up, says, hey, you know, your battery health. And look, laptops do this. Like if you buy a ThinkPad or something, they have whole software in there that tells you about battery health. Dell does it too. A lot of the big companies do it where they tell you about the health of your battery. You might want to replace it or something. Fortunately, with laptops, even though now that's even going away, you used to at least be able to replace them easy enough. You just buy a new one for $50 or something and away you go. Okay. But, you know, they tell you about the health of your battery. And if Ubuntu wanted to come out, in fact, Windows 10 does this, it tells you, hey, there's things you could do to help your battery life, right? Like, I mean, you get the little health report in the bottom right of your taskbar on Windows 10 anyway. And it tells you, it doesn't do anything. It just tells you that, hey, you could run into some kind of problem here, you know, like this could be draining your battery. Good. Do that. Tell me. Inform me. Inform the consumer. Make the, you know, help the consumer make intelligent decisions. Okay. Give them or at least informed decisions, not say that they're intelligent. Okay. Do that. Don't force feed this shit on me. Give me the option. Tell me about it. Tell me what's going on. And that's what makes this all seem so very ugly. So I don't feel bad for Apple. I am suspicious. I am very suspicious of this whole thing because it does smack of planned obsolescence, especially considering the secrecy. And again, like I said, the fact that they didn't engage in, you know, there are other pathways to solving this battery problem. So no, Apple, I don't really believe you. And I'm glad a lot of other people haven't over the years. I'm really glad about that. So anyway, speaking of old smartphones, now I'm not going to, we're kind of running, I want to get to the interview, just the awesome interview with Mistress Harley and have Stephanie come on. You know, I'm going to save this for next week because I want to test it some more, but the Guardian Project, which I am a big fan and have been supportive of and have talked about for years on this show. They make Android apps like they have been, you know, working with the Tor Project, which allows for you know, your Android phone to use like Orbot, you know, and access Tor and Orfox and all this different stuff. And they've made a bunch of apps over the years that have just been tremendous for helping activists, respecting privacy, etc. You know, if you're an anarchist like me, like it's great. You know, you're using the Guardian Project stuff. But they actually worked with Snowden, with Edward Snowden, and probably some others. And they created an app called Haven, which I am going to be testing this out over the next few days, and then I will do a full report on it probably in the next episode of Sovereign Tech. It's still in beta. I put the link in the show notes that'll take you to the GitHub for it. Okay, but what it allows for is you can take an older phone, an older Android smartphone, and you can turn it into like you have a lot of different options of how it can help you create your own little surveillance system, your own little encrypted surveillance system. It's very, very slick. Okay. So check out the link in the show notes for episode 257 if you want to find out more about that right away. But I'm going to be testing it out and you know, going, putting it through the paces, and we'll talk about it more next week. So there's that. Now, real quick, let me tell you about another thing. You know, if you're into privacy, security, all of this, and like we mentioned, cryptocurrencies, then I want you to check out a Sovereign Tech sponsor, that being Zencash. Oh man, am I so excited for all the things that are going on with Zencash. There was a lot of major releases this week. Well, maybe major is not exactly the best term, but exciting developments. So you have, they came out with Zencash. Of course, Zencash is a cryptocurrency, real quick. Zencash is a cryptocurrency based upon the Zen platform overall that uses zero knowledge proofs, which is just an incredible breakthrough in cryptographic encryption. I mean, this is a full-on scientific breakthrough. Zero knowledge proofs, phenomenal. So it's this entire platform built on that, with Zencash being the cryptocurrency part of it. If you want to get into Zencash, okay, and I recommend that you do. If you're having problems with Bitcoin or whatever you're having problems with, you know, whatever other crypto or altcoin or something that you're using, I'm telling you, take a serious look at Zencash. They had their, right now you have a faucet, which just reminds me of the good old days with Bitcoin, right? Where you had the Bitcoin faucet where you could get some free Bitcoin every day. Don't you wish you could do that in the amounts that it was putting out back then? But right now there's the Zencash faucet. So go to getzen.cash and it will pay out a little free Zen to you. Every time that you run it. I mean, it's really, really nice. This is a nice free way to get people involved with cryptocurrencies. You know, I always love a good faucet for that. So go to getzen.cash for that. They also came out with Zencash paper wallets. There's now a whole website that's dedicated to that. The secure nodes are still rocking and rolling. There's links in the show notes for all of this for episode 257. I am so excited. I am so supportive of what they are doing with Zencash. This is, you know, I tell you all the time, there are very few, as in I usually don't let it go over like 3 or 4 or 5, you know, cryptocurrencies that I get excited about. Zencash is easily. In fact, hell, it's in my top three. I mean, I am so excited about Zencash right now. I mean, this is just tremendous. And I thank them for supporting Sovereign Tech. I believe in what they're doing. They believe in what I'm doing. It's a perfect match. So check it out. And if you want to find out more about Zencash in general, go to zensystem.io. Okay. That's zensystem.io. And that will give you the hookup. So without further ado, let's get into this week's very much a special feature. Mistress Harley is, like I said, some time ago, we talked about what she does, which is Mistress Harley is the tech dom and also financial domination. You're going to find out what all those things are. If you're wondering, what the hell is that? You are going to find out. But I think this is just wild stuff that is being done, and just amazing, you know, business, entrepreneurial opportunities that so many of these new technologies really allow for people to take advantage of. I mean, and we're going to talk about, believe me, in this interview, we're going to talk, and Stephanie's going to be right here. We're going to talk about like where all this can go, what it means for a lot of other things. We'll talk about cryptocurrencies. We'll talk about virtual reality. I mean, this is a wide ranging conversation that was just an absolute pleasure. Mistress Harley is a brilliant woman, obviously. And I fully support what she's got going on. I think that this is just so cool. So give it a listen. Have that open mind going and get ready for some sexy, because it's there, baby. It's all over the place. And do check out her work after the fact. So, and I'll be back with more. We've got a full review that we're going to do after the fact I won't spoil that surprise of what that product is that I'm going to be talking about. But yeah, exciting stuff. So anyway, here we go. The Golden Stallion, Dr. Stephanie Murphy, and Mistress Harley. Give this one time. Woo! So Brian Sovereign's here with you, and I'll tell you, I am not alone this time. In fact, I'm really, really not alone. I'm not used to, you know, sometimes I have guests on, you know, whatever. I'll have somebody in studio or something, and then that's always very enjoyable. And I am being joined by the lovely and hyper-intelligent Dr. Stephanie Murphy, as usual.
Hello, Brian.
Yeah, but that's not all. So this is something I've been wanting. I talked about this, boy, I don't remember how long ago it was, but there was an article about a person that I read, and I was, wow, this is amazing. Instantly went to go follow this, this woman on Twitter. And Stephanie, you also read this article, and you're like, wow, this is so cool.
I believe we talked about it on Sex and Science Hour.
We might have talked about it on there as well. Yeah.
Yes. And of course, I'll let you introduce her, but I'm super pumped about this too.
Yeah, this is really exciting. So we are being joined by Mistress Harley. Mistress Harley is the tech dom. This is, again, I'm really excited for this, because so many times we talk about on Sovereign Tech about like new entrepreneurial opportunities, you know, new, I mean, and I, you might think, whoa, wait a minute, what's this Mistress Harley stuff? We're going to break into it. But we talk about this sort of thing, how like so many new angles, new avenues for, you know, making money and doing whatever else and expressing yourself exist now. Uniquely, I think, in many ways, because of, you know, what the internet provides. And Mistress Harley, I think, is one of the epitomes of, you know, just the unique things that you can do. So Mistress Harley, welcome to Sovereign Tech. It is such an honor, and I mean that, to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
So now I've got to ask. There's two main things. We'll start breaking into them. There's two main things that you're very well known for, and then we'll probably let this conversation, you know, go where it goes. But the first thing, and I mentioned it already, that I think most people that you're very well known for is being a tech dom. Then there's the fin dom. But what could you describe for me? What is the tech dom? And I'd love to get into your history too, how you got into all this stuff. I mean, I think that'd be fascinating. But what is the
sure.
tech dom?
So a tech dom, specifically the tech dom, is someone who takes over your life via high-tech devices for the purpose of BDSM or sexual pleasure. So for the layman's terms, right, the idea is that I can use things like your cell phone, your computer, the cameras that are on your computer and phone to control you and force you into certain sexual situations that we have both agreed on consensually.
That sounds a lot better than the NSA doing it.
Yeah.
I'm invited. I'm like a vampire. I have to be invited.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So you, I mean, like how exactly does that work? Because I mean, my mind is just full of questions. Like, I mean, are they giving you their passwords? Are you, you know, doing anything on your, like how does this take shape?
Okay, so there are a lot of ways that high-tech domination can take shape. I'm just going to kind of gloss over the variety of ways, but anything that you can think of can. So, for example, I have a slave right now in Sacramento. He has Nest cams all over his house, and I can log into the admin dashboard and watch him in any room of his house, and I can talk to him and tell him what to do. So that's one method, right? The other method is I've created a phone app that Android users can purchase directly from me, and they download it onto their phone, and it's like the nastiest spyware app you've ever seen. I can block programs. I can read your text messages. I can even send text messages from your phone to contacts in your phone as if they are from you. I can look at your pictures. I can do all kinds of stuff, right? I also take over people's computers via desktop sharing software. A lot of people are familiar with this in IT as like TeamViewer or AnyDesk.
Remote desktop apps, yeah.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It allows you to access a remote computer and use it as if it was your own. So what I typically do with some clients that are interested in computer control is I use a desktop sharing software to go take admin control of their computer, and then I install keylogger and spywares and web filters in order to control so they can only see what I want them to see and do what I want them to do. The web, the keyloggers will collect all the words that they type, all their passwords. I can actually go through and look in their like Chrome saved passwords or Firefox saved passwords. And, you know, you basically can learn anything about anyone via these methods. I open people's cameras and look at them while they're sitting there at their computer. But it's just one number of methods. And recently I've been looking at a lot of like doggy tech, you know, like keep an eye on your pet while you're away, and that has little treat dispensers, right? Like it is perfect. It works out really well.
But then it's the humans, and you know, so, going for the treats, right?
Exactly.
Right.
But I think like, you know, porn and sexuality drives a lot of technological innovation. And so, you know, here we are sitting here with all these like high tech interconnected devices. With the Nest guy, I can control the temperature in his house. Like it's really granular.
So I think you explicitly already said this, but like all of this, so when you, you know, before you're pretty much, you know, putting key loggers and whatever else on these people's, you know, computers, I mean, this is consensual. Like they're saying, yeah, I want you to do this, et cetera.
Not only are they saying, yes, I want you to do this, they're paying me for the privilege. I wouldn't even bother if you hadn't paid me first. That's a waste of my time. You might be broke. Yeah. Like I might take over all your computers and you might have like $10 in your bank account. So who cares?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. So just to get a little bit geeky on the BDSM side for a moment, what kind of fetish is, I'm trying to fit it into a category. Is it like the humiliation that they enjoy of being spied on and caught doing dirty things? Or tell me more about that.
Well, I mean, first of all, we're talking about a huge number of people that I play with, like in the hundreds and thousands. So let's say that there's like a Venn diagram of overlapping fetishes, and some of these things touch on some or many of them, right? So like for some people, it's the humiliation aspect. Sure, absolutely. For other people, it's about being micromanaged and having like that total power exchange where someone can say, no, don't eat salad tonight, eat only a hamburger, you know, and having that level of control over someone's life. For other people, it's about being exposed and being vulnerable and being seen, the having a voyeur watch them, having knowledge that someone else can see everything they're doing. It really touches on a lot of different fetishes. And it's funny because like for me, none of these things would be personally exciting. To have someone take over my computer, I would be pissed off. Like, get out of my computer. Right. But for submissives that are into this, it's almost an extension of a lifestyle that they want, you know, but they can't go to the BDSM clubs. A lot of my clients are in like Kansas, in places where there is not like a strong BDSM community. And so how do you express these desires that you have to be controlled, to be humiliated, to be seen, to be forced to do things, to be blackmailed, like in a fetish sense? You know, you can do with them online. And the way that they feel real is if they are actually real in your life. And so having these like high tech takeovers actually lets people kind of bridge the gap in the kinkiness that's missing in their lives in a real way.
Yeah. You know, now that you describe it that way, like a light bulb just went on above my head, because I think a lot of people, you know, ask and say, well, wait, who would want this to happen? Why would they want this to happen? Isn't this very terrifying and
kinky
all that?
Kinky perverts, that's who.
Exactly. It's just the digital extension of tops and bottoms. I mean, like that's really what you have here. And that's brilliant.
Exactly. And how do you at over distance, right? Like, how do you actually dominate someone who's not in the same room as you and make them feel like that is real and the same like emotional roller coaster of being not in control, you know? So it's a really interesting kind of extension of all those things.
Yeah. It seems to open doors too, like you said, for people who don't have access to a local kink scene or whatever. How do you manage to keep all these perverts straight? Like, how do you micromanage thousands of clients?
You know, I mean, it's not like one big Excel sheet, right?
Right. I have enough trouble with my own life, right? I'm trying to dominate myself, my own schedule. How do you do it with so many other people?
Well, Brian actually hit it on the nose, which is I keep a giant Excel sheet, actually several levels of Excel sheets. I actually have a master's degree in library science and information technologies with a specific focus on databases. So basically, I've turned one of my groups of users into databases and sorted them with all of the information I have about them, their logins, their passwords, their limits, you know, because we do discuss limits, of course. And, you know, their contact information so that I can kind of sort through any number of data sets at any time to see who needs control. I make calendar reminders.
I so remind you're literally a pro at this. I mean,
oh, of course she's a pro.
Yeah.
This is my only like source of income. And obviously I keep track of a lot of people. So you kind of have to be a spider in the web, I guess.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, it's amazing that like, and yeah, I was kind of kidding about the Excel sheet, but you're absolutely like, that's literally what you're doing. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Library school taught me that the simplest methods for cataloging an organization are really often the best. And so before I was doing this, I was actually building private libraries, custom libraries for billionaire clients. And so I got to like catalog entire collections of like cars and books and like all kinds of things. And so it was really interesting to me to be able to apply all of that organizational knowledge to like all these perverts and weirdos, like you said.
How many people have a librarian fetish as well? That probably plays into it.
Yeah, I didn't spend long as a librarian. That was about like a year-long career before this took over my life completely, because I was just making so much money that the idea of working for someone else was kind of foolish at that point.
So did you become the tech dom first, or were you a fin dom first? Which one came first?
What is a fin dom, Brian, for our listeners?
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they kind of both happen at the same time. So my background, right, I was working in high tech in software for many years while I was getting my master's degree. And I was also in my BDSM scene in San Francisco just casually. And so I was kind of actually a pro-dom first, because people started offering me money to play with them at like San Francisco Citadel, Power Exchange. Like, there are a lot of San Francisco scenes.
Oh, yeah, and, San Francisco. Yeah.
And so I started making like quite a bit of money doing that, but I had to actually do this library job for my degree, because they won't give you master's degrees and things unless you actually do them. It's weird. So I was kind of doing both at the same time, like some library stuff, some pro-doming stuff. And then as soon as I took my business online, I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess if I'm making a lot of money as a pro-dom, I need a website. And as soon as I, and a Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. And so as soon as I took my business online, I saw all these people like desperate for sessions with pro-doms, looking for pro-doms who were not located anywhere near me. And of course, they were looking for like more traditional like cam girl type stuff, like Skype sessions. And of course, I do those. But a lot of people were looking for more. They wanted a relationship. They wanted a relationship with a mistress that would be able to have real life consequences for failure to obey. And my background as both a QA tech and a technical project manager meant that I already had like an extensive knowledge base of systems that would allow me to do that. And so I just kind of started cross-applying my knowledge. And then one day I just called myself the tech dom. I was like, oh, well, I'm like the tech dom. And then I Googled it, and there was no one had ever used that word. There were zero results on Google. No one had ever used that word before. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that's what I am. I'm going to trademark that. And now I have a business done.
Sure. Wow. Okay. So
that's awesome. I think so many times the best business ideas come out of your own hobbies and interests that you're already into. And if you can combine them in a unique way, then it's even more special. And you come up with something that nobody else has thought of before.
That was a pretty exciting moment, just realizing that I thought of a thing that no one else had thought of before. I mean, other people were kind of dabbling in like using desktop sharing software, like one piece or another piece, but no one had kind of put it completely together and called it a thing. So that's what I did.
I think that's awesome. Now, FinDom is something that like both of these sort of organically, you know, became a part of what you do. So could you describe for people what a FinDom is? And then we'll
sure.
Kind of go from there.
So FinDom is short for financial domination. And that's a kind of BDSM play where a submissive gets off on spending money or giving money to their top or dominant. And I would point out that many vanilla relationships have a financial domination component. My favorite is when I hear a husband say, oh, I make the money and my wife spends it. I'm like, yep, that's a FinDom relationship.
Yeah. They just don't necessarily call it that.
Right. And, you know, I think that's how kink is. Like so many people do things and they don't necessarily have the vocabulary or vernacular for it. You know, they just know what they do in private. And so financial domination is really interesting because it's a big fetish online. And of course, there are like men at any given moment looking for women to take money from them. Like, and here again is the Venn diagram of fetishes. Some men like to spoil. Some men like to be humiliated by having their money taken from them. Some men like to feel useful and valuable as contributors to your life. Other men like to feel ripped off and scammed. So, but there are a variety of ways to accomplish all of those things using all of the tools I just talked about.
Yeah, sure. So when did, I mean, I imagine the argument, like you kind of made, the argument could be made that financial domination, you know, that whole kink started with the Sumerians, for crying out loud, but you know, if you want to, but like, when did it,
how did it start with the Sumerians?
Well, I mean, people,
like, it's been around since the beginning of time.
Yeah,
you're saying,
exactly.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Yes.
Right.
I was like, women have been taking men's money from the beginning of time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so when did it start with more, you know, where it took advantage of, say, the internet and things like this? Do you have any like concept of the history on that?
I personally don't. It's a bit shady in terms of, you know, who documents weird fetishes they're doing anonymously on the internet.
Great point.
FinDom was obviously around in a decent sized way on the internet. I want to say at least 2 to 3 years before I started, but that's just because the women that I know that are in kind of the top echelons of financial domination have only been around that much longer than me. So, you know, I think it's something that's really started to get big in the last 10 years just because of the availability of things like Skype sessions, of live videos, of hot, sexy pictures. Platforms like Twitter and Instagram have made it really big because you can like hashtag search for those things. There are small communities like websites like Yahoo groups, but you know, none of those would be, I think, more than like 10 to 20,000 people. Whereas on Twitter, you literally have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people following FinDom accounts and interested in financial domination. So it's really been a growing fetish, but I think that is going to be a kind of limitation on that. Just like anything that's more extreme, like there's a limited number of people that want to be choked until they pass out. There will always be a group of people that want to be choked until they pass out, but it's never going to like skyrocket to 1,000 for some reason. Like it's just kind of what's built into, you know, our desires and how those things tie into power and how we eroticize those things.
Do you have any thoughts on how people develop a fetish like FinDom, or do you not even go there and just say, well, it doesn't matter why they like what they like and I'm going to help them with that?
Well, I agree with you that it doesn't matter why and they like what they like, but I have heard people's stories over the years, and it often has to do, I think, with a lot of early sexual experience. Like FinDom is an interesting one because in our culture, we have had this idea that like, if a man goes on a date with a woman, right, a gentleman is supposed to take her out and treat her and not expect anything in return. Well, if that's a lot of your earliest sexual experiences is like taking a woman out and spoiling her and trying to show her a great time and then being denied sex, some people cope with that experience by eroticizing that exact experience. Mm. And I think the same thing goes with ripoff fetishes. Like some gorgeous woman took advantage of me and we never had sex, but it was the hottest thing. And I still think about it all the time about how that gorgeous girl just ripped me off. And And I even think about in my young dating life, there was this guy named Jamie who would buy me all the shoes and boots I wanted. Like, he would just take me shopping for shoes and boots, and I was a shoe and boot whore. And except I never had sex with him, not once. And we dated for like a year.
He just loved seeing you put on the shoes and boots, right? I mean, that was the deal.
Right. Like, yeah. There was some, I mean, well, he obviously wanted to have sex with me. Like, he was obviously hoping that at some point this relationship would continue to develop beyond the shopping, but it never did. And I sometimes wonder if I left that guy with a fine dom fetish, because I didn't know that that's what I was doing at the time, but retroactively, I obviously, and you know, we have phrases
for
this.
He already had a foot fetish to begin with.
Yeah, it was a pretty formative year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I think our experiences shape what we eroticize, and so many, and money and power go hand in hand. You know, people always want to separate money and power. In the BDSM community, you know, as soon as I started doing like pro dom work, I was no longer welcome because there was like some idea that the money tainted this experience. And I just kind of thought that was a lame way to look at it. It, you know, the money is just another tool for power exchange in a literal way.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
absolutely
right. I love this analysis of it. I love to think about the psychology and stuff. But ultimately,
I'm,
you're right.
I'm fascinated as well.
But you're right. Like, I agree. It doesn't matter why people like what they like. And it's also important, I think, not to overthink our kinks and our fetishes and our likes and desires, because that can make it less sexy.
Absolutely. You can ruin a perfectly good time by thinking, wait, I'm a feminist or whatever. You know, I had a girlfriend who was the bottom, and she said that she would always ruin her experiences by thinking about that it, being a feminist and being hit in the face aren't like compatible. And I just thought, why are you doing that to yourself? Just enjoy it. Just stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's common. I've heard stories like that before. Would you consider yourself a feminist mistress?
I consider myself a female supremacist, which is different than a feminist, because feminists want equal rights with men. And I think that that is a bunch of malarkey after the last 5,000 years.
Mm.
So, all right. So this is cool. So describe for me a female supremacist. I mean, I think I get the gist because it sounds basic
Isn't it self-explanatory?
But yeah. Go for it. I want to hear this. This is great.
Well, just replace the patriarchy, which always treats people that are not men as lesser citizens and deprive them of their rights and pay them less in a fair economy. And swap the genders. So a matriarchal society in which women ultimately, like, I want more women in government than men, considering we outnumber men by the statistical percentages. That makes sense as an actual representation of the population. I want more women making decisions about things like healthcare and everything else. I want women getting paid more than men, because we still have to work while we are bleeding from our genitals. So really,
be the change you want to see in the world.
That's right.
Right. I'm trying to do that too. I'm trying to get paid more than men.
When women are in charge, like Queen Elizabeth I, when she was in charge, Europe had its greatest period of peace for 500 years. Same thing with Catherine de Medici. Same thing with many other female rulers. It's like, name a female Hitler. Go.
Right.
No,
it's interesting
can't.
You brought up the Medici. Right. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, maybe, I don't know. Well, Catherine would be Catherine the, I don't know.
Catherine of Scots.
I mean,
no, the Queen of Scots was executed, but Catherine de Medici was running things even while men still sat on the throne. I had my BA is in history, so I will easily get sidetracked. So feel free to stop me.
Brian loves history diversions.
Yeah,
we do too.
Particularly the Medici family is an interest of mine. So, but anyway, it's a fair point to bring up. But I do want to shift gears back for a second, because with the financial domination, like, do you have a female clients as well? But do guys just like send you a few thousand bucks? I mean, like, what does that look like exactly for you?
Financial domination, like all fetishes, can take many forms. So sure. I will run through some of the experiences I have had. Man sells his car, sends me 10 grand. Guy sends me a ATM card to his bank account with my name on it. Guy I've never met sends me $20 for no reason on the internet. Guy buys ripoff video that is a 1 minute long video saying you're dumb for $1,000. Some guys like to reimburse me for my bills. So I'll say, like, I just spent $100 at brunch, send me $100. It can take many different forms. Oh, I've been listed as the beneficiary in people's wills and insurance policies. What else? People make legally binding debt contracts with me. Like you would make, you know, when you sign a mortgage and you say, I owe the mortgage company $100,000 and I will pay them back X number of dollars at this interest rate over X number of years. I have exactly those same contracts, except instead of a mortgage, it's for services rendered. So you just sign a legally binding document that says you owe me money on a payment plan. And then I can sue you in court if you fail to pay. I'm trying to think of other financial domination fun good stories.
I have a question, Mistress Harley. Have you been familiar with cryptocurrencies, and have you ever played with cryptocurrencies as part of your work?
Like Bitcoin. You read my mind, Stephanie. I was going to ask about this too. So,
I used to accept Bitcoin. I actually just recently stopped because I am convinced that bubble is just about to pop like a fat balloon. So, I have accepted some Bitcoin in the past, usually from clients where they have, I'm trying to think of how to say it. Like regional problems. So like Russian clients pay in Bitcoin. I had a guy in Kuwait pay me in Bitcoin. Places where it's not as easy to get US dollars or, you know, Visa credit card. Like I think that tends to be the market there.
Right. That makes sense.
Sure. Have you dabbled in any of the other cryptocurrencies beyond Bitcoin at all? Or is it just been Bitcoin?
No, just Bitcoin. And you know what the cryptocurrency that no one talks about is? Amazon gift card dollars.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay, yeah, go for it. You're raising a great point.
So you can't, you can convert these back to cash, and I'll tell you how. So a lot of women, especially in Findom, take Amazon gift card dollars because they show up as anonymous charges. You know, Amazon charges on the guy's credit card statement, which wives and girlfriends aren't likely to think too much about. And then it's totally untraceable. It's totally untaxable. And then you can trade. There are all these websites where you can trade in gift cards for 70 to 80% of their value. Amazon gift cards, sometimes you can get 85%. So that is like, I think that's the new hot black market exchange is Amazon gift cards. I no longer accept Amazon gift cards for payment because they're not money. And I hate having to do like conversions, and I'm a business. I can just run your credit card. There's no reason for Amazon. And also I've had like a $5,000 gift card balance that I haven't been able to spend down for ages. And so sometimes I'll accept them as gifts only, not as rendered services for payment. But a lot of people do. And I think Amazon is probably doing millions just in financial domination, sex work trades. Like, and they don't even know.
I could believe that. And I think it's probably true for a lot of other industries too, because I've gotten in arguments with guys about this because I've said, you know, look, the most valuable currency in the world right now is the Amazon gift card. And I said, and it is a full-on currency because you can exchange it, you can pay for stuff. I mean, you can do everything with it, you know.
Everything.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you can do just about anything with it. And they said, oh, no, it's not really a currency. It's not this. But like you just proved, yeah, you can actually convert it back to cash. You can do other things. And I'm really glad you mentioned that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I know that women are living off of that. I see girls taking, like, they only take gift cards. They don't actually have an alternate form of cash payment. But I see them online operating. And so, you know, they're living off of those gift cards. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's absolutely a currency. And I think the tax evasion part of it is the most interesting. As someone who pays a lot of taxes, like, I'm like, that's very interesting.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, and I'm all for, you know, people doing what they got to do as far as, you know, to make a living, whether it's, but you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, we've heard cases of sex workers and even people with completely legal businesses that were somehow deemed quote unquote high risk by the Department of Justice having their bank accounts closed and just said, yeah, sorry, we can't. The bank says, sorry, we're shutting your account down.
Because they're in sex work. Specifically.
Not even just sex work, or other industries too.
Sure.
Like legal marijuana industries and other products, even like companies that were offering money back guarantees were one of the ones that were targeted in the Operation Choke Point stings.
And journalists as well. Like I know a call column writer. Her name is Violet Blue on Twitter.
Oh, and yeah, we know fan. Violet Blue.
Yeah, big fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And she, her PayPal was shut down because she writes columns about sex and sex work. And so, I've had all these same problems. I don't even do nudity. You can't see me naked, no matter how much you pay. And my PayPal has been shut down. And, you know, I'm very specific about what payment methods I take. But now I just go direct with the bank because I'm a business. So, you know, but it really is what's high risk is being in a high risk category and trying to work with any of these people. You know, the number of chargebacks you actually get. I mean, I get like 3 chargebacks a year, you know, which is way less than Starbucks. I'll tell you right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, and it just goes to show why all these kind of alternative forms of currency need to exist. So now I guess I wonder, I mean, you know, we briefly hinted there at that, you know, PayPal shut down your account, stuff like this. You know, what kind of backlash do you get? Do you get, I don't know, like I could just imagine conservative groups freaking out or like MAGA groups, you know, men's rights groups and everything kind of freaking out towards you. I mean, what kind of, do you deal with any backlash from your line of work?
You know, I've gotten very little backlash, actually. And I think it's because movies like 50 Shades of Grey, as poor representations as they were of the community, really helped people conceptualize the idea that like, oh, I'm not into that, but maybe it doesn't hurt if other people are, and that's okay. And so I was on CBS's The Doctors, and it was actually the doctors themselves, the guys doing the interview, that were the most hostile. And they were like, well, you're taking advantage of men. I'm like, this is a consensual adult behavior. And
oh, really? Yeah. How about we infantilize them a little bit more, right? I'm sure those men don't appreciate that.
Let's continue to make sex workers responsible for men's sexual and spending decisions. Like, that's great. But they basically accused me of that anyone that's in financial domination is mentally ill and that I should be sending these people to therapy instead of taking their money. And I said, well, you know, you haven't evaluated medically a single one of these people. So I think that's really irresponsible. But that was really the only backlash I had. And I was really interested to actually see that, you know, they post the episodes on YouTube. And even most of the YouTube comments were sympathetic toward me and not the doctors. They were like, well, why did you guys invite this woman here just to yell at her about a thing adults do in private? Like,
wow.
Yeah, right. I mean, it shows so much of what goes on, especially like in psychology, psychiatry, and all that. The broad sweeping.
The pathologization of kink.
Exactly. You know, that.
Yeah, and you know, gay people have been dealing with this since, you know, the 50s, and trans people have been dealing with this and are still dealing with this. And the idea that being kinky somehow means you're mentally ill or you have some kind of problem without an actual medical diagnosis by an actual psychologist and not a TV doctor, like, you know, that's just like, it's so offensive to me that's the story people want to go with. Just saying that most of my press coverage has actually been really positive. So that was like the only backlash. You know, and there's always some vanilla guy on Twitter who thinks I'm like a horrible person, but I block people.
Well, you know what they say about those people? Sometimes they're protesting too hard.
Oh, yes. The lady doth protest too much.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, when you were mentioning 50 Shades of Grey, I remember at the time when it first came out and it experienced this explosion in popularity, there were these surveys that were done on women, and they were saying like something like 80% of the women were like, yeah, that's hot, even though they wouldn't necessarily consider themselves kinky. And I just found that incredible. I think, you know, I think there are a lot more kinksters out there than realize they're kinksters necessarily.
Absolutely. If you look at the sales rates of romance novels, which we all know are lady porn, they're all 20 pages of dresses and then 50 pages of hard throbbing members. Like, you know, there's so many fetishes in romance novels, like the pirate ravishing and raping the girl who's a virgin and she doesn't want it, but she kind of does. And like all of those.
Every romance.
Right. That's every romance novel. And like those are the feelings we're all trying to capture and experience in kinky plays. Like, oh no, don't ravish me. Okay, ravish me, but like not too much. Oh my. It's but a lot. Oh no.
Right. Yeah, saying that is part of the game. It's all part of the game. So
yeah,
I have a question related to that.
Just real quick, if you want to hold that question.
Okay.
Because like I think this raises an interesting point about people, you know, being into things they're not willing to admit. I bring this point up often on the show that ever since the Kindle came out, you know, the Kindle e-reader itself. Mm-hmm. romance novels through the roof. Who's buying all these new romance novels? So there's suddenly a ton of new women in the world or something? Well, I mean, there kind of are, but what it is men are buying them because now you can't see the cover of what they're reading and they love it. So yeah, absolutely. People are always hiding what they're into.
Absolutely. And now you can read as many like trashy romance porno novels as you want and find out that you really do want some like big, strong man to press you against a wall and take what's his, or you really want some mean woman to manipulate you and take you for everything you're worth. You know, these are just all those feelings that then get eroticized and expressed in all these myriads of ways. And now we just live in a world where there are so many ways to take advantage of those feelings and play with those feelings and express those feelings. And I think that's the part that's like really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So Stephanie, you had a question.
Yeah. My question was, how do safe words work when you're not in the same physical space as a client?
I agree on buyouts. So basically, if you want the session to end at any time, you can just say, I'm going to pay you $200 to make this stop. And I say, okay, once I receive my $200 or whatever are agreed on buyout prices, you know, it's different for everybody depending on their level of income. You know, you have to make it harder for rich people so they can't just snap their fingers and get away from you. But, you know, basically, if we don't establish a verbal safe word, which I just do still do sometimes with like Skype shows or, you know, those kinds of sessions. But typically it's a buyout because, and then that I also have that on paper as like, okay, well we agreed to this and you said this and here is our agreement. And if you want this to end, you have to pay to make it stop.
Okay.
Right on.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a brilliant solution to that. So, you know, the Skype shows that you mentioned, like what do those look like, or do my listeners have to pay to see, to get an idea of what that looks like?
No, I don't mind. Usually it involves like a really sad, naked, pathetic looking male on one end of the screen, and then I am usually fully clothed or maybe skimpily clad, but still like PG-13 or R-rated at best. And then I like will tease a little bit and be like, look how hot I am. Now you have to smack your balls for me because you're so dumb that you paid to have a beautiful woman tell you to smack yourself in the nuts. How does it feel? Like I'm genuinely amused. I'm a bit of a sadist. if you didn't pick that up. And so like, I love watching guys like humiliate themselves or like they think they're going to jerk off and get to come. And then I don't let them come because I'm so mean. And then they cry and then I laugh and then they cry and then I laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's a good time.
A good time was had by all. That does sound like a good time.
So you never, like you said, you never get nude though. They do though. I take it.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times I can't stop them. Sometimes they show up and they're naked. But yeah, I don't do nude. You know, I tease, like I'm a flirt, like, yeah, fun. But like, I don't show anybody my genitals. Like I do what I'm comfortable with. And that's basically saying, don't you wish you could have this? 'Cause you can't.
And for anyone listening right now, when this gets released on release day, if you want to go to @TechDom to see what we're talking about, you know, because Mistress Harley is very gracious to share plenty of pictures.
D-O-M or D-O-M-M-E?
Yeah, it's D-O-M-M-E.
Okay.
If I'm correct. Yeah, Tech. T-E-C-H-D-O-M-M-E. And you can see, you know, exactly who we're talking to right now if you don't already know.
Also, literally just Google Mistress Harley and I am the first like 5 results. No one else has the SEO that the Tech Dom has.
So, okay. So that's what a Skype thing looks like. I mean, I think we covered a lot of the different ways in which, you know, the Tech Dom and like financial domination, you know, like how that all takes shape, what that ends up looking like. I mean, do you have any predictions? And if you don't want to reveal them because you want to keep an angle, I understand that, but do you have any predictions for like where any of this can go next? Like, are you looking into virtual reality? That's certainly a technology I'm excited about. I mean, like where do you see the next level?
Yeah, I definitely think VR is coming in a big way, and I am looking into that. There are a couple of studios where you can basically rent the studio for the day, and then they take a billion pictures of you with the balls on them, and then, you know, you can then turn those into like VR experiences. And so I think that's going to be big. I also think the future of creepy sex robots is going to be huge. And so as soon as that becomes like a manufacturing possibility. Like, you know, every porn star has, and even I do have, like a replica fleshlight, like portable pussy. So like, okay, everyone has the portable pussy. So in 20 years, will we all just have like weird sex robots that you can buy of us that are like, this is the Mistress Harley bot. She will only insult you and say mean things and hurt you. And like, do you want this in your home? Yes or no? But I think that that's definitely the where the progression is going. But more and more people are living their lives online. You know, online communities are more important to people than some of their real life communities.
Sure.
More people have relationships via Skype. I'm traveling. My husband's at home. We're having a Skype, you know, call or FaceTime or Skype sex or whatever. Like all these things are getting super normalized for our experiences. And so what I think will be interesting is to see what becomes more normalized. Like, will you go into somebody's house and get to meet their weird sex robot and, you know, have dinner with them and their sex robot? That is the stuff that I think is going to be like crazy fun for the future.
Yeah, you know, I've talked about it a few times, the sex robots, which, you know, I'm fine. They come into existence. I mean, I don't think you can really stop them. The Japanese have wanted them for the past 50 years. And I think where I felt would always be the big market for that would actually be with like married couples. You know, like I think that they would be the ones that would want that kind of safe third member that they can
right, the safe threesome with the sex robot. Yes. So my husband had actually asked me if we could get like a sex robot or if that would be weird. And I said that it would have to look exactly like me, but be a little bit less attractive than me, like slightly less attractive.
Fair.
and then we could have our sex robot threesome. So.
Wow. So like with the virtual, like you said, I think it's a good point that, you know, the market's going to bear out exactly which one of these things will, you know, be the most normalized. You know, will it be virtual reality? Will it be, I mean, it might, you know, I guess it's not really a zero sum game either. But like with virtual reality, I think, did you say you were looking at like some apps or studios or something? I mean, like how can you picture that adding into your work if you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what would be really interesting is like an automated Mistress Harley. So right now I have a chat robot that you can go chat with that's very offensive. Like it basically only tells you to give it money or to visit my website. Or if you tell it, suck my dick, it'll tell you, no, you suck my dick. So but what surprises me is how many people interact with it. Like I get these logs that are like, here's every conversation people had with the chat robot this week. And some people talk to this robot for hours, and it's not a good robot. I cannot stress that enough. It is a bad, bad robot. And right? And so I think that like if I could create a VR Harley, okay, so now I have a VR version of myself. And now if I can program that VR version of myself to interact in certain ways and always like, so as soon as someone says the word penis, like I say something degrading, like that's pathetic. You should see a real penis. Like, you know, as soon as I could start to play with something like that, I think there might be a way for me to create like a totally virtual version of myself that could maybe like do all this stuff for me. And then maybe it would be smarter than me. And then maybe it would kill me and take my place. Right. Yeah, I watched a lot of science fiction. So
same here. I'm with you all the way.
No, I mean, it is really cool, but it also like we've touched on all this stuff in the interview, like this is opening doors for people who don't have local access to a BDSM scene. It allows people to indulge in fantasies that they wouldn't be able to otherwise. It's safer for sex workers, right? And it's more, it's like it makes their job easier, right?
And let me take a minute to also say, I have a lot of submissives that are disabled in some way. So like I have one client who's deaf. I have another client who only has like access through a teletype machine. People who are disabled physically and can't actually like leave to go have these experiences. And so as always, you know, when people are ragging on sex work at all, I would like to point out that like sex work often serves a really underserved community. And that's people who are isolated, people, you know, even though the mentally ill thing was brought up, but I'm in the doctor's thing, but I'm thinking of people who just have social difficulties. Like I know some of my clients have like Asperger's or just like difficulty connecting with other people. And so allowing more methods for people who don't have access to have access to their own sexuality is really valuable.
Yeah, and it, you raise a great point too, because you know, in that doctor's segment, obviously they were talking, or from what I understand, they were talking about all mental issues. I mean, to say nothing, but you're bringing up the physical issues that people have, where it's actually solving the problem. Like, they think you're abusing people with mental issues, but you're actually saving people with physical issues. You know,
how ableist of them, right?
Right. Yeah. Way to go, doctors.
Yeah, doctors. Yeah, and it really is interesting how many people I talk to that, you know, are on some level of the spectrum, just in terms of like, no, I'll never actually talk to a human woman in person. Like, that sounds awful to me. But just talking to a woman that I know in a controlled situation, that I know what the response is going to be, and I can say these words and she'll say these words and everything will be fine. Like, it really does serve a purpose. And in library school, we learned a lot about serving underserved populations, you know, putting libraries in places where there aren't libraries. And sure. I think that ethos kind of extends to what I do as well. You know, I try to always create spaces where there's like free speech, intellectual thought, that there's not a limit to your like fetish thoughts. People judge their own fetishes so much. I recently got a lot of flack on Twitter because people said I was a racist because I had made some custom videos for African-American clients that use the N-word because they wanted to be humiliated through the use of the N-word. That was what they specified to me.
Right.
And I had this whole like ethical dilemma, right? Do I deny service to African-American clients who want a specific thing?
Yeah, that's
tough. You know what I mean? But it's uncomfortable. But then anyone else looking at this material is like, oh, Mr. Sarli says the N-word. Mr. Sarli's a racist. And I'm like, no, I'm making this content for this underserved population. And, you know, requested it, paid for it. Like, and again, I Skype with these people. So I know that these are actually like black guys asking for videos for a specific fetish. Like, it's not like a white guy, you know? And so it was a really interesting ethical dilemma. I did end up taking down all of the those videos just because I was afraid I was going to get banned from Twitter or sure. other social media that I'm on, even though in my mind, this is just like an intellectual exercise of both freedom of speech and people's desires to be humiliated in a certain way. You know, who can tell anyone to not eroticize something because it's offensive? Don't eroticize the N-word. It's offensive. Like, well, yeah, I get it is offensive, but isn't being offensive kind of what we do in kink? And isn't that what we explore and play with and touch on? And,
well, and telling them not to be turned on by it is just going to have the opposite effect anyway. So why bother?
Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't work, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nature of so many fantasies, you know? I mean, it's just one aspect of it all. So now I guess I wonder too, because you're raising a great point. Like, you're concerned about, you know, your Twitter account getting shut down or, you know, a lot of these, you know, a lot of, you're an entrepreneur. I mean, I think we can say that straight up, you know?
Yeah, I'm a business person. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a business person. Absolutely. So I think a lot of them, you know, there is that real concern that, well, you know, these third parties, I might be relying on them quite a bit to, you know, to reach out to new clientele or to market myself or whatever else. But you do a lot of other things. Like you have books. I mean, do you have like contingency plans in mind for if that sort of thing ever happens? How much would that affect you if that? Because I kind of raise the red flag on a lot of these things, like people relying on Facebook. I mean, Facebook changes their rules, you know, by the
absolutely.
Minute.
Yeah, it's yeah so we've bad. Reached so a what, point.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we've reached a point where corporate censorship is worse than government censorship because corporations can actually censor your ability to do business. And so on Twitter is where a lot of business happens for sex workers, where bookings happen, where sex workers get found, where they can, you know, explore your background, verify that you're real. And so I have had my Twitter account shut down already one time and I just made a new one and fuck it, you know.
Sure.
And if I get shut down again, I'll just make a new one. And if they keep shutting me down, eventually I'll have to get my lawyers involved, which I do have lawyers. But ultimately, at this point, I think I have a big enough following between my books. I teach classes also to other DOMs who are learning to get into financial domination or professional domination. I also, because I've made so much money off of Fine Dom, I have other vanilla businesses that have nothing to do with any of this stuff, like beauty salons and restaurants and, you know, other now secondary like funnels of income that I can always focus on.
Sure. Hell
but,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, at this point, I am very diversified, but this is still like my sole source of business. You know, all the other businesses that I have, like, I don't even run them. They just exist. You know, so it is really interesting. So trying, and I did in the end, I decided to censor myself. I said, look, I'm not going to make these clips anymore, even though they're for African-American people, even though I don't disagree with the idea of wanting to be humiliated in a certain way. But right. For me as a business person, I cannot have this like branding that I'm a racist. I would also like to point out I'm like married to a mixed race black guy. Like, I mean, we talk about these things in our home, like, hey, is this too fucked up for me? Like, you know, we have these conversations, you know, like there are just certain things that the business can't tolerate. And so, sure. Okay, like now I've had to limit myself in a way that I actually find to be kind of offensive. As a librarian, I had to buy books about, you know, the Holocaust never happened. And, you know, right. you have to, it's the law. The law is you have to be inclusive.
Yeah, that's a great point, because one of the things, you know, like on Amazon, so I'm an author as well. And on Amazon, like at one point, some of the books that I see on there, like, I mean, even just in the erotic level, right? Like you have those famous books like Taken by the T-Rex, where it's literally a woman sure. getting stooped by a T-Rex. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, oh, wow. Like, all right, that's going a little far for me. Not that I have much in the way of limits, but I'm like, you know, that's going a little far for me. But I'm like, but at the same time, I'm so glad that that's there, that stuff yeah. actually exists, and that it, because there's people who are into it. And who am I to say, you know, we're individuals. Who am I to say what they can and can't do?
Bless their weird little hearts. Yeah. You know, it's diversity that makes up the world. If everyone wanted to live in LA, it would be unbearable because everyone would live here. You know, if everyone wanted to have the same kind of sex, it would be boring. And, you know, in the fantasy realm, in the realm of intellectualizing, there is no harm you can do. No fantasy that you have is too off limits. It's not doing things in real life that are not consensual or within the law. You know, that's a different thing. But if you want to fantasize about having sex with a dinosaur or being a dinosaur and having sex with a human, like, right on. Good for you. Yes, do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is something that a lot of people like miss, you know, because like I said, I have talked about your work in the past on the show, and some people, I think they really do miss the point that you're so hardcore about, you know, being consensual, everything being consensual. And that's absolutely really important to you. And I think that, you know, that point can't get driven home enough. And it's certainly a major topic, you know, in today's world is all about consensual.
Goodness. I mean, it really has been. Yeah. Consent is huge. Well, I mean, both as a person who was in the BDSM scene casually and recreationally, you know, that's how I learned, by going to dungeons and being told all those rules. You never touch people without their consent. Don't even hug someone you know unless they invite you. And for me also, again, as a business, as soon as something is non-consensual, it's illegal, and then I have problems. So it doesn't even make sense to try to act non-consensually or forcefully if someone doesn't want that, you know. But for people that do, for people that want the extreme, some guy sent me $15,000 yesterday for no reason. And, you know, I'm not going to argue with him. I'm just going to say, okay, great. I hope that fulfills some grand fantasy you had. And he probably spent his whole life thinking about how he wished he could like sell his boat and send a beautiful woman as money, you know? And so who am I to judge what turns other people on, as long as it is safe, sane, and consensual, you know?
Yeah. No, I love it.
You guys have been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's
been
so much fun talking with you. This is awesome.
Yeah, I always enjoy a good intellectual conversation about, because there really are so many things here. Like, there's so many things, and it's not just porn. It's like sexuality and freedom and intellectual freedom and business, and it's a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, there's this concept of what's called terror management theory, which means that our fear of death is what drives us to do everything. I always say, no, I think it's the opposite. I think actually our love of creation and sex is in some ways, you know, an expression of that. I think that's what drives so many of us, whether we want to admit it or not. But, you know, you don't want to go around saying that we're all a bunch of sex crazed maniacs or something. Because that's not going to go over well with the, I don't know, whatever group. But
don't leave out the asexuals.
Well, right. Yeah, good point. So but still, like, I think it's true. I think sexuality, even non-sexuality, or like an expression of like asexuality, right? I think all of that really does, you know, drive a lot of this stuff forward. I mean, my interest in virtual reality, I mean, I think the ideas that you expressed about how you could take advantage of, you know, virtual reality, were phenomenal. Like, you could just automate Mistress Harley. Great. You know, and
yeah,
and these are, but that kind of thing, like, you know, I hear that, and myself, you know, my interest in virtual reality, a lot of it has to do with sexuality.
Of course.
And, yeah. And so I think that that's, you know, all these kind of original ideas. And I mean, it's phenomenal, you know, to see it finally come to fruition, see people take advantage of it, and really empower the individual. I mean, because, you know, I mean, yeah, you said you have lawyers, you know, you have a husband and everything, but like, are you kind of a, I guess when I ask this, are you pretty much a one woman show? I mean, are you, how much is it? Do you have like employees? I mean, how does that work out?
Oh, no. I mean, I have people that work for me, but I wouldn't call them employees, like, you know, accountants and lawyers and sure, all the people that help you manage your business, investment management people. But yeah, I really am a one woman show. Like, I do all of my websites. I do all the technology that you see on my websites. You know, I make videos, I edit videos. Like, I do all kinds of stuff. And I'm always researching new stuff. Every time I see like someone up in arms about parental control software, I'm like, ooh, what's this new parental control software? What does that do? And I think that the possibilities are endless. And as tech becomes more and more available to more and more people, I think it does empower us individually. And I really like the way you said that about, because our sexuality is an intrinsic part of who we are. We want to compartmentalize it away. You can't do that. It's part of who you are. And it's part of your experience in life. And so being empowered through whatever technological devices, you know, whether it's on Skype or whether it's having cameras in your house or whether it's, you know, having a chastity lock that only unlocks via Bluetooth, like, you know, as long as you're being empowered to explore and experience your own sexuality in a way that you're comfortable and happy with, like, that's the purpose of all of this stuff.
Yeah, you said it beautifully. Absolutely. I mean, that's what excites me about tech. What's always excited me about tech is how it empowers the individual, you know,
exactly.
Like, how it can turn one person, you know, give them the abilities that, you know, 100 years ago took 1,000 people, you know, to do. I think that that's amazing when you can do that sort of thing. So that's phenomenal. So Mistress Harley, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find you? And I'm sure they're going to want to find you. I hope they do. Go ahead.
I can be found via an easy Google search. Search for Mistress Harley, mistressharley.com. I am on Twitter at TechDom. And I look forward to any number of inquiries. I really enjoyed the conversation with you guys. And what a pleasure.
Yeah, no, it was great. And of course, all those links will also be in the show notes for this episode of Sovereign Tech. So Mistress Harley, again, thank you so much. Stephanie, thank you for joining us, for being on as well. I mean, when you come on, the show is just magic. So when we have two ladies on, it's double magic.
My pleasure. And
how can you hate having two ladies? Oh, my pleasure.
I do not. Yeah, absolutely.
I knew Brian wasn't going to complain about that.
No. So thanks so much. Okay. And well, we'll be back with some more Sovereign Tech. Can you get enough of that, baby? Oh, man. I'm not kidding. I said it earlier in the show. It was an absolute honor to have Mistress Harley on. I would love to have her on, and I mean that. I would love to have her on again in the future. I get the sense she's the kind of person that, you know, you could talk to about just about anything, and she would just have, you know, brilliant stuff to say about it. I mean, really. So in the future, we'll see what we can make happen. But I'm really enjoying having guests on. Lately, we've had a few, and you know, it shakes up the show a little bit, gives a little something extra. And certainly, I mean, what better way to spend Saturnalia, my friends, please. So, of course, you heard all the show notes. And if you are, you know, look in the show notes for all of the links to get connected with Mistress Harley. And hey, you know, if you want to rock her services, I don't blame you one bit. Go for it, baby. Anyway. All right. So let me tell you about another service quick that one of our sponsors at Sovereign Tech, of course, that being CryptoCompare.com. And wow, is it a time to be keeping an eye on the prices and all the goings on and darings do with cryptocurrencies and blockchain technologies and all that. CryptoCompare.com is your best place to do that. It is a tab that I keep open at all times. I try to keep only a few tabs open, but let me tell you, CryptoCompare.com is one of them. And it is just a fantastic resource to, again, keep an eye on prices. You want to find out how Zencash is doing? Go to CryptoCompare.com. You want to find out how Zcash is doing? You go to CryptoCompare.com. How's Bitcoin doing? You go there. How's Bcash doing? You go there. Whatever. Any of those. That's where you go. That's where you get your hookup. All right.
CryptoCompare.com. Thank them so much for being now really a longtime sponsor of Sovereign Tech. And wow, you know, the cryptocurrency space is just so exciting. So many awesome new developments that happen every day. You know, you got to keep track of it, and that's where you do it. So we thank them for sponsoring Sovereign Tech, CryptoCompare.com. All right, woo. Let's get right into the climax, shall we? This is kind of a hybrid of the climax and maybe tool of the week. So since we're doing a somewhat non-traditional show this week, you know, we don't have all the usual segments. But what I am going to be doing here is actually a review of a piece of hardware. Of course, the climax is the part of the show where I can talk about whatever the hell I want to talk about. And tool of the week is usually where I talk about something that I find useful. This happens to be both. I want to talk about this and goddammit, it's useful. What this is a device that I had actually, boy, this is a long time coming, not just for me, but for a lot of people. So I am a voracious reader, to say the least. I usually make the comment that I read as a wolf eats. Like, I mean, that's just how voracious I am. That's just how hungry I am for. And I like long form reading, you know, none of this bullshit, you know. I mean, I get it. Blogs are nice and the websites, whatever. I like books, you know, I'm going to be digging into Mistress Harley's books, I'll tell you that. I love books, and I am a big fan of e-readers. I'm a big fan of, well, really the entire universe that has been created around Kindle. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Amazon, and I don't need to repeat that or the reasons why. But Amazon really has been changing the game. I mean, and they are definitely the leaders when it comes to, well, I think books in general, not just ebooks, but certainly when it comes to ebooks. Now, I know some people, you know, there's some research, and this research goes back and forth. There's research that says print books are coming back, that, like, you know, ebooks aren't as big a deal anymore, or that their sales are declining and print sales are going up, or that they've been steady. But then there's also research to suggest the opposite, that because of ebooks, more people are willing to read. I mean, you know, so this kind of goes both ways. But I'm a big fan of e-readers. I wouldn't call myself a minimalist, but I certainly am one of those types of people that, yeah, I mean, just about everything I own, I could throw into, you know, I could easily throw into a carry-on bag. I mean, in fact, honestly, on a maximum carry-on bag, I could probably fit most of my clothes too. So, woo, yay for wearing triple black all the time. But anyway, I love e-readers for a variety of reasons, some of which might hint at stories we talked about earlier, like preserving games and everything. I mean, preserving books is so important, and e-books are a major way of doing that. Of course, also, you know, on the flip side, if you have centralized control of e-books, ebooks could be a terrible way to preserve books because, you know, the book could get updated, and suddenly when it had an apostrophe before today, it suddenly has the apostrophe after today in a text, and it completely changes everything, and suddenly people have wild views of the afterlife. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm actually talking about the thief on the cross next to Christ. But of course, I'm an atheist, so don't worry about that. It's just making a point that there's a huge, 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 huge theological precept that exists around where that comma lies. But anyway, just saying the importance of all that. So, but now I'm just going on forever. What I ended up getting, like I said, this is something that's been long coming, and I'll explain why. What I ended up getting is a new Kindle. Now, of course, I've been using a Paperwhite for years. Before that, I had other e-reader devices. But I have the latest, what they call the ninth generation, and I don't know why it's called the ninth generation when this is really only the second Kindle Oasis to ever come out. And what's interesting is that the last Paperwhite, which I got to figure out what I'm going to do with that Paperwhite, is the seventh generation. But then the Kindle Oasis that came out after that, the previous Kindle Oasis from 2016, was called the eighth generation Kindle Oasis. But it was the first Kindle Oasis. I don't understand the nomenclature. I don't understand the naming that's going on here. But anyway, the one that just came out end of October that just finally got released, which is the ninth generation Kindle Oasis. Again, I don't understand why they're calling it that. Maybe we'll call it Oasis 2017 for clarity. Or what we'll really call it is the waterproof one, because that's what's so memorable about it. And that's really what everybody's been waiting for. So I want to review the Kindle Oasis a bit here, because I think this is such an important device and product in a million ways. Not because it's attached to Amazon. I mean, obviously, there's conveniences that come with that, and we'll describe them, because there's other features that it has that are kind of unique to this model as well. But yeah, people have been begging forever for there to be a waterproof e-reader because, you know, what's the one thing that really a device could best a book at? You know, and that is inexpensively waterproofing books, really. I mean, you know, having the book stored on the device and having the device be waterproof, because it's not hard to waterproof a device. Phones have been doing it for years now. I mean, and there's a slew of other things where, yeah, they make it waterproof. Now, yes, I know there's paper, you know, you can buy like notebooks and there's even like, well, I mentioned the Bible already. I know there's versions of the Bible where they sell them that are pretty much indestructible. Like, I mean, you know, they can get wet and it doesn't matter and you can write on them and all that. You know, I understand that those kinds of things exist, but those are very expensive propositions as to where this is not, well, this device is expensive, but it's not exactly as expensive a proposition. In fact, I found out after the fact, after I ended up getting this, that there are whole companies that all they do is waterproof Kindles. Like that's their whole purpose in life is they waterproof tablets in general, I guess, but more specifically they waterproof Kindles, which is easy to do because Kindles have like, there's no speakers. I mean, like they're, you know, you really only have one port that you have to worry about with that, which that's waterproofable, etc. So, and Kobo of course has had waterproof. They've had the Aura H2O model for some time, but this is the first one that Amazon did where it is completely waterproof. That is one of two major features that this has brought on. There's a bunch of other, you know, 300 DPI, whatever, you know, that looks as almost as good as paper. That's not necessarily, you know, new to the Oasis. The Paperwhite had similar. It has, as far as like backlighting, it has like 12, I think, LEDs now to where it's a very even backlighting. And I'll tell you, you know, actually that enhanced backlighting is legit. And the reason I can say that is that on my Paperwhite, I think that only has like 6. You can only, so there's like levels, there's numerical levels of how far down, how much you can turn down, you know, the brightness, say on a, you know, on the backlighting for your Kindle as to when you could still read it for the e-reader. And on the Paperwhite, you can only go down to 5. And then like, if you go much lower, it becomes pretty much unreadable. As to where with the Oasis, you can go down to 2 and you can still read it. And I think it's because of that even lighting. I don't think the numerical values are different. In fact, actually, I did like a comparison and they looked exactly the same. Just one allowed you to read and the other didn't. So that's a real advantage to having, you know, more backlighting to it. It's actually front lighting. It's not really backlighting. Like it's shining it onto the page instead of into your, or, you know, onto the screen instead of into your eyes, which is the right way to do it. That way you can still fall asleep at night, even though you are getting the blue light, whatever. Anyway, so that's pretty nice. The waterproofing aspect of it, there's only one port on it. There's the, which that's kind of important too. I'll explain why, because some people would have liked a second port on this. There's only the micro USB port on it. Yeah. I wish it was USB-C too, but whatever, it's micro USB. So there's the micro USB port on it. And, that's really the only thing, you know, that's not like totally sealed in or whatever. I mean, and there's a power button, of course, but the waterproofing works great. I took it in the shower with me and I was reading both Stephanie and I took it in the shower with us and we were reading to each other while we were in the shower. We shower together. Woo. And, you know, that made for some very interesting conversations. That's for sure. Anyway, the waterproofing works great on it. I'll get into the other major feature in a second, but I got to tell you, as far as the feel of the device, this is absolutely a premium device. Like I think it's a solid block of aluminum, you know, along the backing of it. And then, you know, whatever comprises the front where you have the touchscreen and you have two physical buttons on it, which, by the way, the latest latest software update for the Kindle Oasis allows you to temporarily disable the touchscreen so that you can just use the buttons. Now, this is important because when you go into, say, a shower, you know, with your lovers or whatever, when you go into the shower and you bring that with you and you're trying to read something, if the shower, you know, when the water starts hitting the screen, it acts like a capacitive touch. And so it would start flipping through the book on you. So that's the beauty of having physical buttons. And that's the beauty of being able to turn off the touchscreen, is that, you know, you can still flip through everything that's going on even while there's, you know, water pouring on it. So you could, theoretically, you could be completely submerged underwater and you could be reading this thing, which, I don't know, you know, that might be a kink for some people, but whatever floats your boat or your Kindle. And that was actually, that was a major complaint over the last generation Kindle Oasis, was everybody's like, well, why can't I just set it to where only the buttons work? And I mean, you can't do it indefinitely because to get through the menu system of the Paperwhite, you know, you can't really use just the two buttons that are on it, the buttons which allow for forward and back, you know, movement between pages. You need the touchscreen. So it only, you can only turn it on while you're reading the book, and it obviously only works within the book. And to turn it off, you just have to, like, you know, you just press the power button and then turn it right back on. Which brings me to, so again, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous device. I mean, absolutely, like, this is totally, granted, it costs, you know, depending on which model you get, I mean, you know, starting price is around $250. And I know that's steep, but frankly, I think it's worth it for the construction quality, for everything that it offers you. Again, we'll talk more about what it's offering. Okay, I don't think that that's a crazy price. So I have the 32 gig model because, well, here's the secondary feature that everybody's going nuts about, is that this allows for playing Audible books, and you can access and purchase through the Audible store right on this e-ink screen, right on the Kindle Paperwhite. So, you know, that, I mean, that's a big deal, but that's why I went for the 32 gig, because I listen to audiobooks quite a bit as well. And also I like to store a ton of books, you know, onto my device. So it's 32 gig. I did get the Wi-Fi only because I don't, and I know that, like, the 3G aspect of a Kindle e-reader is, like, one of the original major design principles for when they first invented these things back in, was like 2007, I think, when the first one came out. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years. But I, you know, You can never, the thing is, I've had Paperwhites where they have the 3G, and there's, you know, you can do fun things with it because you can kind of cheat to where you get free internet and you could access Facebook for free and never have to pay for, you know, an internet connection or anything like that. I mean, there's a lot of fun little tricks and advantages you can do with that, but it doesn't work really well when you leave the US. So that makes it kind of meaningless. And also, it creates a persistent connection. You actually can't turn, like, there's settings to turn off Wi-Fi, you know, to go into, like, airplane mode, more or less, which airplane mode should turn off the 3G. But I'd never like the fact that you couldn't, like, switch to, you know, that you couldn't, like, leave it on Wi-Fi, like, that you have control of Wi-Fi, but you don't really have control of the 3G. You can't just turn off that radio, which is what I wanted. That's the bottom line that I'm making. So I don't really get them with 3G anymore. I don't like that persistent connection, really. So anyway, yeah, so this is the Wi-Fi model. And of course, I, you know, paid for where it doesn't have special offers because, you know, we have enough advertising that we have to deal with. It's fucking annoying. So now, as far as the way that again, very, very premium device, the way that it, you know, it's super light. It's definitely lighter than my Paperwhite, which I have a hard time believing, or at least it feels lighter. That probably has to do with the aluminum. But, the interesting thing is that it has one side of it where the two buttons are. It's a little wider. Okay. And there's, like, a bump on the back where obviously most of the battery and other kind of internals are there, which the battery life on this thing is phenomenal. Like it just goes for days and days and days and days and days. But, you can actually, because it seems like it might be a right-handed favored device, actually, when you just flip it around, it could be a left-handed device. And what the screen does is the screen will auto rotate to where it turns into a left-handed device, and then you can just flip it back around and it turns into a right-handed device. Works very well, very slick. You know, they definitely put a ton of thought into that. It also has the ambient light sensor, like the Kindle Voyager has, where it can automatically detect, you know, your lighting situation and adjust accordingly, which is, you know, pretty nice as far as that goes. Now, let's talk about the Audible situation. Okay, so obviously with 32 gigs, it can hold tons of books, and, you know, everybody knows what... There's nothing... Well, all right, I actually did notice this thing seems to be a little slower than my seventh generation Paperwhite as far as reading PDFs. It's a little weird about how it functions on that. Maybe it's just a bug, maybe a software update will fix it, but it seems to be just a little slow. And I mean, only on PDFs though, you know, and I know PDFs can be tough to process, certainly some of the ones that I do too, but because they can be, you know, fairly large. But yeah, I thought that that was kind of odd. The other weird thing about this real quick that I've never experienced with any other e-reader, and that may be part of why it has such phenomenal battery life as far as like why it can be on standby so long. If you haven't touched it in a while, like a couple hours or so, maybe even less, it, when you go to, when you press it to turn the power on, it comes up with, you know, usually when you turn off a Kindle, it has like that, what, it, you know, just puts like an e-ink screen in place, even though it's effectively off. Well, it's not really off, but you know, it's in standby mode, and it'll like, there's that wallpaper where it's like pencils and or letters and all that shit. Anyway, what'll happen is it'll say, it'll come at the bottom and it'll say waking up. And it'll take a few seconds. No, it's fine. I don't mind waiting, you know, a few seconds. But that is a new, I've never had a Kindle that did that before, where it actually takes it, where it's not instantaneous, that it doesn't turn right back on, you know, and I'm right at either where I left off in a book or I'm at the menu screen. So that's kind of an oddity as far as it goes. But anyway, I mean, as far as like the rest of the features, you know, like I'm willing to deal with it, especially the feature that everybody's talking about, which is the fact that it can play audiobooks from Audible. Now, like I said, it only has one port. It has a micro USB. You can, it only supports audio through a Bluetooth connection. Okay. Which makes a degree of sense. That's partly how they are able to make this such a small device. You know, it's such a thin device. By not having a 1/8 jack in it, even though I know there's plenty of ways to get around, you know, I mean, and certainly the battery bump, like I said, that's on it, that acts as kind of a handle or a handhold, you know, could easily fit a 1/8 jack in there. I totally recognize that. But, you know, again, I think they're thinking about the future. But I think there might actually be like, I think there's some good reasons why they felt, okay, you know, we don't need to take up the real estate that a 1/8 headphone jack would take up on this. And there's a few reasons I think that they had in mind as far as that goes. And then we'll talk about the experience, what it's actually like listening to an audiobook on it. Well, actually, we'll kind of play into that a little bit too. One thing is that when you are listening to an audiobook, now understand what people love about e-readers, Kindle e-readers especially, is that they are one-trick ponies in a very real sense. And they're not just one-trick ponies. Like, literally, they can only do one thing at a time. Okay. Yeah, you can download stuff in the background like that. That's a possibility. But, you know, you can't actually, and some people I know wanted this feature, but when you're listening to an audiobook, you are listening to an audiobook, and that is all you are doing on it. You can't use, because, like, you know, there's that experimental web browser that's built into it that, you know, you could check Facebook and Twitter, and maybe if you had a very basic email client that, or, you know, client service that you could check with it and look on Wikipedia and stuff like that. But you can't do that while you're listening to an audiobook. You really can't do anything while you're listening to an audiobook. And I mean, that's true if you're reading a book or if you're on the experimental browser. Like, I mean, you know, you can only do one of these things at a time. And I think that's a strength of the device. Like, you know, in fact, I mean, that's, you know, we were talking about kind of the design language of the design principles that they had in mind for the Kindle back when they first made it. And that was one of the design principles, is that this thing is meant to do one thing only, you know, even though back then, with the original Kindles, they used to have 1/8 jacks in them, used to be able to install MP3s on them. So, I mean, they had a little more options about that. But I think that the market has really borne out for them that, and the consumers have really said to them, what we love about Kindles, and this is certainly what I love about them, is what you can't do with them. You know, that's one of its real strengths, one of its real powers, is what you can't do with them. So anyway, so you have that. So you can't do anything else while listening to you know, while listening to an audiobook on this thing. So that means that, I mean, I don't think you're just going to sit there holding it in your hand and staring at one screen, because when you play an audiobook, it comes up, it looks kind of like in the Audible app, if you've used the Audible app, where, you know, it has like a timer bar at the top. It has a picture of the, you know, cover art of the book that you're listening to. And then it has like a chapters option. It has a bookmark option, it has a volume option, and then it has a speed control option, which is the most important option, right? Is that, you know, you can listen to books at whatever, 1.5x, 2x, 2.3x, which is my standard. So you know, I mean, you're not going to hold this thing. And understand that the Kindle Oasis itself, the waterproof one, it has like a 7-inch screen on it. Okay, so that's a larger side of Kindles. For me, it's still pocketable. Like, I mean, but I'm a big guy, 6'1", over 200 pounds and all that. Like, I mean, I can put it in my pocket, but most people can't put this in their pocket. And that's the thing, is that it's not like a phone where you slide it into your pocket and you can have the headphone jack cord, or, you can have the cord that connects your headphones into the 1/8 jack on the phone, say, hanging down your back or under your shirt or something like that. You're not going to do that with this. That, in fact, it's downright impractical for the average person. Okay, so what you're probably going to do is you'll put on an audiobook, right? And then you can actually turn off the screen. You can effectively set the device in standby, which will keep the audiobook playing. So you can turn on the audiobook, and then you're going to turn off the screen, and then you're going to slide it in, either your purse, your man purse, your bag, whatever. Or on the desk or something, and then you're going to, you're going to listen to it. You're not going to be interacting with the device while you do it. So I don't think it's crazy that they didn't put a headphone jack on it, because it's really not necessary. There isn't a great argument to be made for it in this case. I am all for it. Believe me, I want my laptops, I want my phones, all that stuff to have headphone jacks. And I wouldn't have minded if this had one too. But at the same time, I also don't need it to. As long as I'm not invested, in a really great pair of headphones that I want to listen to audiobooks with. That's another thing, too, about the audiobook experience. So it sounds great. The sound is phenomenal. Of course, that largely depends on your headphones more than anything. But you don't get the option, not that I could find yet anyway, where, like in the Audible app, you can choose if you want a high-quality version of the book or a low-quality version of the book. I don't know which one they're exactly running with on this, but you don't get the option of which one you want to, you want to download. So maybe even having a great set of headphones is even antithetical anyway. It doesn't even make sense to use it anyway, because it might be giving you the low quality version to not take up so much space on that 32 gig of storage. Or even, the stock model actually only comes with 8 gig. So that's even less to hold. So it only makes sense that maybe they would push the low quality version, though maybe they'd put the full quality version on. I don't know. So anyway, so the Audible functions work great, and yet you can buy right through the store. You can go, just like you can buy Kindle books through the store option on the Oasis on an e-reader, you can now go to the Audible selection. You can just buy books right there, and it works very, very well. I don't know. Here's something I don't know the answer to, and I couldn't really find an answer, is that, so if you buy a book from Amazon, okay, through the Kindle store on your Kindle, with a 3G model, it will automatically download that book for you for free that you bought through the Kindle store. I don't know if it does that with Audible books. I really can't say. In fact, I almost feel bad that I didn't get the 3G version just so I could test that, because I couldn't exactly find an answer. Because, that's, an audiobook, even at low quality, if you go downloading, Atlas Shrugged or some kind of shit, like, you're talking hundreds of gigs or hundreds of megs. Like, how is AT&T, which is the provider for, the free 3G service that Kindles have, how are they going to put up with that? that could be a bit of a drag, unless maybe they do allow for it. And the reason they allow for it is because this is such a premium product that, it's kind of a barrier to entry to a lot of people getting their hands on one. That could certainly be a part of it too. So anyway, outside of everything that I just described, like I said, the Audible experience is actually really, really slick, really nice. I like it a lot. Been listening to some Sherlock Holmes on there. And the e-reading features, like I said, other than the PDFs seem to be a little slow, that it's fantastic, and it works like any other Kindle that you can imagine, where you have collections and all that stuff, and you can upload your own docs to it and whatever, your own books and everything. And then it just, it's a very, very smooth device, and the waterproofing is very nice. Just say it. I mean, it's really nice, that you could be on a cruise or you could be on a beach or whatever. And I mean, it's not just waterproof. Again, it's full on IPX8. So, this is a tough little cookie, which also I think adds to, kind of the premium price tag that comes with it. But this is the thing, is that, what I really love the reason that I love e-readers, the reason I love this device so much is because I can just stow it away. You know, I mean, it's easier to fit than any other book, or I mean, just about any other book, unless you buy like miniature books and whatever, you know. I hate that I have to say those sorts of things, but I always just get some asshat who like who will share a meme who will say, well, what about this book? Look, it's only this big. It's only so many centimeters. It's like, stop. Nobody thinks you're funny. I don't think you're funny. And like, just let me make my fucking point and get on with my show. But whatever. Anyway, you can put it away. Okay. And just about anywhere. I mean, and it more or less disappears. I mean, I'm not going to say, look, books are still, you know, paperback books are, or, you know, books, printed books are still, you know, the king. They're still awesome, you know, but there's a convenience that comes with this, having very much the world at your fingertips, you know, with the thousands upon thousands of books you can have. And now also the audiobooks, which is just a tremendous, because there's some books that I really love to experience in that way. Not all. Most books I like to just read, you know, but some books, they do such that, you know, they turn them into audio theater, and it really works. Oh, you know, that's another thing real quick. That's not a part of this. That might be a deal breaker for some. If you use, like I said, Kindle and also Audible now very much, Audible is an entire ecosystem. Like, it's an entire platform. You know, there's like those news briefings that you can get through Audible. There's the Audible channels that have, you know, what chalk up to being podcasts and a lot of other stuff on there. None of those are in the app. You can't access those. It's just your audiobooks, nothing more. And no, you cannot upload your own, no matter how hard you try, no matter what you format them as. Because like, I think an Audible audiobook is AAX, I think is the extension, the file extension. No matter what you do, you're not going to get it to work. Your audiobooks, you're not going to be able to get to work on there. It is purely through Audible. As to where with the ebooks, yeah, you can upload your own ebooks if you want to, as long as you convert them to Mobi files. But anyway, so it's awesome to have the world at your fingertips in that way. If you're able to navigate it, yeah, you can use the experimental browser to access Facebook or Twitter or very basic email, which could be, you know, that could be kind of nice. It's just, it's so simple in what it does. The battery life is phenomenal. And it's just, it, you know, what's amazing about it, because you can only really do one thing at a time, it is a distraction-free device. That's the real winner about this. You know, I've said it before, I would love, I mean, I have such a deep passion for e-readers. Like, I'm so crazy about these things. Again, I keep, you know, it's the only thing that I really wear. Oh, yeah. Ooh, the new one's out. OK, I'm on it. You know, I mean, like where I get that real techno lust about it. And I really think that devices like this could, in a very real sense, save the world, you know, or at least save your mind, which is your world in a, you know, in after a fashion. So, and I, what I mean by that is that, you know, things are generally long form, you know, there's no more distractions. You are completely immersed. You know, a lot of people said when the first Kindle Oasis came out, they thought it was weird that it didn't have waterproofing. It's like, oh, here you have this whole new model, and but it's not waterproof, and you called it the Oasis, which infers water. I think, and I'm going on a hunch here, okay, because I haven't read anything about what their idea was behind why they named it the Kindle Oasis. I mean, other ones you can imagine, Paperwhite, okay, that makes sense. Kindle Voyage, yeah, that one probably should have been, you know, waterproof too, but, you know, you get it, like Voyage of the Mind, right? You know, you're taking your mind for a ride when you read books. But Oasis, what I think it really means is it's an oasis from the rest of the world. It's an oasis from all the distraction, from the attention economy, from the constant, look here, pay attention to this, blah, blah, blah. It's an oasis for your mind. And I think that that's a brilliant naming. If that's why they named it that way, it's the only logical thing I can think of. You know, other than maybe it's in reference to the waterproofing now, but last year it was because of that. Again, this device just came out about a, you know, month and a half ago. That's what I think it means, and that is so important today. To give your mind, hell, give your eyes a break from the fucking screens. That's another thing I love about e-ink screens. I've talked about my love of e-readers before. I mean, I'm crazy about them. But I love the e-ink screens because they don't wear down your, you know, they don't wear on your eyes like everything else does. And so you can stare at it for hours if you need to. And just that the fact that it doesn't have like a notification system or anything like that, that is so fucking nice. That is so great to take a full break from the thing. It's, and even the lighting feature is nice, you know, that way you can read at night, whatever, before you go to sleep and whatever. I know about the blue light thing, you know, Just saying, you can if you want. Yeah. Devices like this that are purpose built, that are solid, you know, even like I like a part of me appreciates the fact that it comes with this, that it has this premium design and comes with a very premium price, because it means you take this shit seriously. I mean, honestly, like if I walked into, you know, in somebody's house and that I saw a Kindle Oasis, you know, on their coffee table or wherever, you know, there's that kind of that old meme of, you know, somebody has a very large library, you should probably fuck them, you know, as in like that means that they're well read and they're intelligent and, you know, they're stupable, right? If I saw somebody with a Kindle Oasis, they obviously take reading very, very fucking seriously. I mean, they really take it seriously. So, you know, points for you. You just became very stupable. I'm just saying, I mean, like, I think if you see somebody carrying a Kindle Oasis, and I'm not saying this because I own one, you should see that as like, ooh, that's hot. You know, like, wow, kudos to the points for that person. Right. Yeah. I mean, because and then, I mean, you know, because it says it can say so much about a person. It can say that, oh, well, look, they can actually like get away from it all. They can turn it off. They can, you know, not look at not get a million notifications. They can actually pay attention for long spans of time. You know, all of these things that I think we're going to find going into, you know, the next few years and beyond are just essential to really enjoying the human experience, you know, and, you know, and really developing and evolving the human condition in a very real sense. Long-term thinking, being able to pay attention, all that stuff. So, so important. You know, I think for mental development and just for health in general. So, and I mean, to say nothing about what it means for everybody, you know, the lack of long-term thinking is literally destroying the world, in my opinion. But anyway, so yeah, I love this thing. I give it, you know, I don't really have the only two, like I mentioned, the two complaints, are that, you know, like the wake up thing, that's not a huge complaint. And the PDF seemed a little slow. Both of those things aren't really major deal breakers though, whatsoever. Otherwise I don't really have a complaint. I don't mind that it doesn't have the 1/8 jack. You know, I'm always carrying my, Bluetooth headphones with me anyway. So that works. I mean, it can be annoying with Bluetooth headphones. If you use them for all your devices, like your computer and your smartphone and your, you know, Kindle Oasis. Yeah, that can be a pain in the ass because you have to keep reconnecting them to other devices. Right. And that takes, you know, that again, that can be a pain. It's certainly not as easy as just pulling out, you know, a 1/8 plug, you know, phono plug, and then plugging it into, you know, into your other device. So, yeah, I get that, but it's fine. And yeah, it's just one more of those things where, boy, you know, especially now that I wish it could do podcasts. That's the other thing I wish it could do. I really wish it could do podcasts. Like if you could put your own MP3s on it, or if it had some kind of podcast feature, which the Audible ecosystem really needs to get more and more on board with that, where they're allowing for a lot more third party content to be available that way. If you could do podcasts on it, I mean, yeah, I love music, you know, but in a very real way, like I wouldn't mind, you know, tossing my phone into the lake of fire finally, you know, because I just carry this thing with me, you know, and the battery life is obviously way better. So yeah, maybe my lifelong dream of being able to just travel the world with only my Kindle and maybe my Nintendo 2DS or something, 2DS XL, could come true. No need to stare at screens. No need to talk to voice assistants or anything like that. Just done, done, done. Oh, what a wonderful world that would be. Anyway. All right. That's it for this week, Sovereign Tech. I hope you had a great time. I sure as hell had a great time. And I hope you enjoyed my review of the Kindle Oasis. I will, you know, if anything else ever comes up about it, I will definitely let you know. But right now, this is one of my favorite new toys, baby. I mean, and well, what am I reading right now? Oh, you ask. Well, I'm actually reading the latest Star Trek Enterprise book, but I'm reading another book, but I'm not going to tell you what that one is. We'll save that. Why spoil the surprise? So anyway, whoo, that is it for this week. If you want to become a Sovereign Tech patron and help support the show, of course, go to sovereigntech.com, SOVRYN tech.com, and you get access to hundreds hundreds of hours. It's going to get to thousands very quickly of exclusive content that's only available to Sovereign Tech patrons. And it's new content that comes out all the, every week. You're going to want to, you want to hear some audiobooks? Baby, I got you some audiobooks on there. I really do. And so much more. Q&As, all kinds of things. So just go to sovereigntech.com for that. That's enough for this week. I will see you on the other side. And make sure you go check out Mistress Harley, baby. Woo!
You just experienced Sovereign Tech. Go to sovereigntech.com. That's SOVRYNtech.com. And connect with us there. Find links from today's show and catch our podcast feed. Sovereign Tech is copy heart. Copying art is an act of love, and love is not subject to law. So please share the show however you like. Welcome to the Evolution.